This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's access media station, Plains FM, and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Emergence News. My name is Nigel, and with me today is John and Peter. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hello, hello.
Hello. How are you? How are you, Nigel?
I'm excellent, thank you. And just to fill you in, John and Peter, along with myself, we are Share International co-workers and volunteers based here in Christchurch, New Zealand, Aotearoa. This program is focused on news and stories that surround the gradual emergence of the new world teacher Maitreya, the head of the spiritual hierarchy of our planet. The spiritual destiny of humanity is in his care, and it's quite a responsibility. His reappearance is imminent. People have been waiting for the emergence of Maitreya since 1982. Before his arrival, old patterns and limitations in the consciousness of humanity must begin to be cleared away, and the way opened for new concepts to find entry, new ideas and ideals. Now, this preparation has been taking place for a long time, and let's be honest, we are already seeing much change, much stimulus, and the introduction of a great deal that is new. For example, think equality, justice, climate change, travel, technology. They're all issues which we hear about on a day-to-day basis. So the emergence and approach closer to humanity is increasing pervasively. It is gradual rather than phenomenal in effect, and is therefore gradually mounting in strength. And I really feel that sometimes. It's mounting in strength like an incoming tide.
Mm-hmm.
So we suggest that you don't necessarily look for a religious figure. The members of the hierarchy who take up the work on Earth, they may not necessarily do so as spiritual teachers. They may not belong to any particular religion or spiritual organisation. Much change is needed before open declaration by Maitreya. To quote the American publisher, theosophist, Lucis Trust founder and husband of the author Alice Bailey, Foster Bailey says, "There is a gigantic struggle going on in the human race all over the world between spiritual freedom and materialistic limitation. Every race, every religion, every nation, every foundation of both science and philosophy is being shaken loose from old age anchorages. This condition has produced a confrontation between those who fear change and might lose their present power and privilege, and those who welcome change. And that's partly because they're so disgusted with the way things are now." And I'm smiling because I'm looking at John, because this stuff really riles him up. He says, "Religion, education and government are all under attack." And I guess you guys would agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
"The latest and most comprehensive teaching in the esoteric field was given to us by the master known in the West as the Tibetan. And his teachings and information have come through such individuals as Helena Blavatsky. This information covers a wide field of subjects, including education, healing, psychology, religion, economics, and some of the laws of life. Laws such as the law of cause and effect." So on today's program, we're going to talk about that law and how we live with the burden of karma. And just before I hand over to John to start proceedings, there's a definition that I'd like to read, and it's Benjamin Krem's definition of karma.
Oh, I love definitions.
And the definition reads, the karma is the Eastern name for the law of cause and effect. It's the basic law that governs our existence in this solar system. So every thought we have, every action that we make, sets in motion a cause. And these causes have their effects, expressed in biblical terms by, I think it was Jesus that said, as you sow, so shall you reap.
Mm.
And from 1999, I've got a kind of another definition here, John. From November 1999, one of the hierarchy masters in close telepathic rapport with Benjamin Krem said, men will learn and understand the subtle laws that govern their lives. The basic law of life, the law of karma, of cause and effect, which controls the destiny of all. So it's no small subject that we're discussing today. And one more definition, just to keep
yes,
you interested.
Come on.
Just one more. And this is Krems. He says it is essential that everyone should have a clear understanding of what the law of karma is. It's an interesting. He says it's essential that we gain a clearer understanding of what this law is and how it works and how it affects them and their every action. Krem writes that the burden of karma depends on intention.
Oh.
The burden of karma depends on intention. So I wonder if that's going to ring true with what John and Peter are going to talk about today. Hmm.
Well, as a matter of fact, it is. Would you mind not reading my mind at the moment?
It really depends on the purpose and intention behind the deed. The quality of the deed. Is it creative or is it destructive? So, John, how do we live with the burden of karma? Krem says that it is what holds us back in expansion of our consciousness on our evolutionary journey. It's karma. How do we resolve past karma? Have you got any answers?
Oh, Nigel, I've been swimming through Benjamin Krem's writings around karma, and as you mentioned earlier, this term harmlessness comes up constantly. So the antidote for karma, Nigel? Harmlessness.
Okay, we're going to hear about that from John in just a moment. And Peter, I guess we need to understand this basic teaching. Is it as simple as it sounds?
Well, it goes back a long way. It goes back to the dawn of time, really. It happened right from the word go when man separated out from God, with our spiritual aspect of ourselves, which is who we are, actually decided to take on the role of coming into men, into dense physical manifestation.
And therefore, free will, we have to take responsibility for our thoughts and actions. And of course, that's how we develop and create karma.
That's right.
Okay, so we've got John and Peter coming up, and John's with us in just a moment as we discuss how to live with the burden of karma. Over to you, John.
Well, listen, Nigel, I've been thinking, how do we explain this? And basically, for me, if I want to simplify it down, it comes to the fact that we are beings of energy, living in an energetic world, in a field of energy. So I'm going to shift that a little bit to, I've got this vision of gas, Nigel. And if we are beings of gas, living in a room of gas, every time we breathe in, we breathe in gas. Every time we breathe out, we shift and change gas. So basically, karma is the movement of that gas.
Movement of energy.
Movement of energy. Right. So it's not the law of karma as in legislation, as in structure and enforcement. It's merely that we are beings of energy, moving energy. And how we move it, and you mentioned intent, reflects in how it returns. If it returns in a nice sunny way, then it's good karma. If it returns in a nasty way,
it's destructive.
And it's because of the way it left us. Mm. Right? Anyway, I've gone to, what is the antidote for karma? How do we slow down or even prevent the accumulation of karma? It's easy. It's very easy. Nigel, it's harmlessness. It's being harmless. It's easy.
But harmless. But harmlessness is not as easy. It's actually quite difficult, isn't it?
Oh, my goodness, Nigel. I've just about given up. Anyway, I went to Benjamin Krem, who's an author I absolutely love and is one of the oracles for us. His book, The Art of Living, Living Within the Laws of Life. And what a great manual for life this book is. Anyway, I've gone to the question and answers section, and he's asked, would you please give a few examples of how we might make best use of the law of karma? I thought was a pretty kind of cheeky question to start with. And this is Benjamin Krem. The best way is to be harmless in every situation. Most people will be harmless in one situation and harmful in another. There are very few people, they must be saints if they exist, apart from the masters, who are harmless in every situation. Because of our glamours, and we've talked about glamours, because of our conditioning, inevitably we are harmful in some situations, less harmful in others, perhaps not harmful at all in others, but in enough to create our karma. The answer is very simple, although difficult. Like everything, it requires discipline. I love that word discipline because it comes from the root of disciple. Right. To be harmless in every single situation, think of the control that one needs. Control can be made easier by meditation and by the positive, definitive function of the will to be harmless and in as many situations as we recognize. We will be harmful in many situations and not even recognize the fact. I am sure this happens all the time. It is only afterwards that we realize just how harmful we have been. And one of the things that sits under that for Benjamin Krem is all of us have the illusion that we are harmless. And we've talked many times about glamour and illusion. We know the length to which we would not go. But anything up to that, if it is necessary, is completely acceptable. We are often harmful, knowing that we are harmful, but not appreciating the depth of the harm, and able, because of our glamours, to rationalise it away altogether. And his quote that really stuck in my mind is, if you want to, you can rationalise anything. Really powerful quote, stuck in my mind. Another idea that he's brought into this conversation is cooperation is harmless. Lack of cooperation, which is competition, is in its very nature harmful. Yet every young person is brought up to believe that competition is the wellspring of life itself. It is not. It is harmful and degrading to the human spirit. It is corrupting and divisive and the opposite, therefore, of harmless, incurring thereby the law of karma. What a fabulous, fabulous idea. He goes on to give us some more tidbits, and this is what I love about Krem's writing. He's asked, is it to do with intention? And Nigel, you kicked this off with intention. The best way to practice harmlessness is to practice detachment. We've also talked about honesty, sincerity, and detachment here.
Well, a better understanding of detachment also leads to harmlessness, doesn't it?
Boom. They are interrelated, right? Mm. The more detached you are, the more harmless you will be. The masters say that the law of karma is a beneficent law, and generally we have more good karma than bad karma. I woke up this morning, Nigel. Good karma. I went to...
You're still above ground.
I drove a car to work. Good karma. I've eaten well today. Good karma. Right? Some people find that hard to believe.
You've still got a job. Good karma.
Yeah, exactly. This is Benjamin Krem again. Some people find that hard to believe, but that may be just self-pity. So practice. Is it to do with intention? Of course it is to do with intention. Now, another question. How can we change? Can we have a technique? And this is what I love about Benjamin Krem. He gives us techniques. How can it be changed to harmless? And Benjamin Krem comes back with, don't say it. If you catch yourself having a harmful thought, take it back. Say, oh no, I slipped there. Get your mind in sync again and lift your attention high, right? Put your attention on your Ajna Center. If you take your attention to that center, you are not going to have a harmful thought. All your harmful thoughts are coming from the solar plexus, that astral nature, right? All right, he comes back with, who has not had a harmful thought? Harmful thoughts go through our minds all the time. We simply take them back.
So it's self-discipline, that word discipline you mentioned earlier.
Yep.
It's the self-discipline. And if we can exercise that, that makes us more conscious of our actions and our thoughts. And goodwill, of course, is it's more or less an active force, isn't it?
Yes. There's a couple of techniques in there. There's that technique of keeping your attention high on the Ajna Center, right? It lifts your focus away from the astral. The astral is emotion. The astral is ego. The astral is destructive. It's fearful, right? There is no easy way, Benjamin Creme says. If it were, we would all be harmless. The real answer is to be detached. There's the second technique. We practice honesty, sincerity, and beget detachment. So the more we meditate, the more we practice honesty, sincerity, and detachment, the more we can become harmless. Now, but it is so difficult, Nigel. Honestly, I've been looking at this
myself. You make it sound easy, John, but
I know, it's not. It's awful. And I'm an awful person because I think destructive thoughts constantly. Anyway, glamour makes harmlessness difficult. Fear, competition. If you've got a strong ego, all of these things produce the justification. The right, Nigel, to take care of people who have offended you or wronged against you, to plan and dream about what you can do to destroy them or bring them down. They just deserve it, Nigel. How many times have you thought that? They just deserve it. BC is on right on the spot with his comment. If you want to, you can rationalise anything. A couple of examples. Putin. He must be master at rationalisation. The destruction and death.
Because he believes he's right.
Yes. And the karma he is incurring not only for himself and his cronies, but the nation of Russia. Let's look at the leadership of the fossil fuel industry. Deceit and lies and destruction. The oligarchy behind the deforestation of the Brazilian rainforest. Rationalisation, rationalisation.
The same in Indonesia with the rainforests. It's all to build and accumulate wealth.
Yes. It's justification and it is rationalisation. All right. It's harmful behaviour. And karma is both individual and national.
Collective, yeah. Thank you, John. Really, really interesting stuff there. Harmlessness. So we're talking about intention. We're talking about exercising goodwill. We're also talking about exercising kindness.
Yes. Difficult stuff, Nigel.
It really is difficult stuff. I hope you can simplify it for us, Peter.
Well, I don't know about that.
Where does it all come from?
Well, anyway, the occult-led fundamental esoteric theme, the law of cause and effect, evokes a general recognition when called by this name. But when it's called karma, it's immediately regarded as mysterious, oriental, and new. Called, as it is sometimes, the law of retribution, an entirely erroneous connotation has become attached to it. Today, the karma of humanity is descending upon it. I would remind you, however, that the continuous emphasis laid on the malevolent aspects of karma convey a wrong impression and negates the full grasp of the truth. There is as much good karma as there is bad. Even in the present world situation, the good karma emanating from the soul of humanity balances the evil which comes from the material aspect and is continually overemphasized.
Why is that? Why is it overemphasized, Peter?
It's the rhythm of matter in contradistinction from the rhythm of the soul. And these constitute the initiating causes of the present conflict, both in the individual lives and in the general world situation. The four lords of karma have actually names, of course, and their names signify symbolically, and from the angle of the inner meaning, relationship, enlightenment, pain, and return. So that's what their names mean. They are peculiarly active at this time, and therein lies the hope of humanity. So it's good news. It is the hope of humanity. Joel Kuhl, who wrote the Alice Bailey teachings in conjunction with Alice Bailey, says that the increase of the Shambhala force is causing certain cleavages to manifest. And we know that Maitreya coming in is bringing with him not just the love-wisdom aspect, but also the Shambhala force, of the force of will, the will of God. It started with a coming into incarnation of spiritually self-conscious human beings. Had the sons of God not come unto the daughters of men, which is a biblical and symbolic way of expressing the great relationship between spirit and matter, had the spiritual entities, which are humanity itself, so this is the saying that we are spiritual entities first and foremost, had we not taken material form and had not had the spiritual element not attached itself to the negative material aspect, the present world conflict would not have taken place. So it's basically because we decided the divine plan of evolution was based upon the production of the relationship between spiritually conscious man and the form aspect. The great law of duality came into being about the fall of the angels. We are the fallen angels, actually, because we are sons of God, every one of us.
Mm-hmm.
And so because we had this, we come from the sinless and free state of existence in order to develop the full divine awareness upon the earth through incarnation and the use of the principle of mind. This was a divine plan emanating from the mind of God and swept into activity and progressive unfoldment by the act of his will. And so we have followed God's will, but we are involved with the war in the heavens, if you like, because we are the sons that decided that we would do God's will and come into incarnation to, our basic plan is to uplift the aspect of matter, isn't it?
Spiritualize matter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. And so this is our role, and this is what we've just chosen to do. But of course, there were sons of God who didn't actually go along with this thing, and they were. He talks about the prodigal son as being the illustration of this point. And the older son stayed with the father in heaven.
Ah.
And we, the humans, who decided that we would take on a human form, are the prodigal sons. So basically, we've come through with this, doing the God's will to uplift the matter aspect, to spiritualize it. And, of course, it created all sorts of division and war in heaven. You know, I mean, obviously it was predicted, but it just shows you that at that level, as a spiritual being, that we still have a choice to stay where we are in sinless nirvana, you might say, and come and do the job. So we've all chosen to come and do the job.
And it's no easy task.
No. Well, it's certainly... but, you know, he says that the karma has... He can... Whatever he has made, you can remake. And I think John touched on this. We can do it again. This is, you know, this is the... We can rethink things. This is the... this is often forgotten. Karma is not a hard and fast rule. It is changeable according to our attitudes and desire.
Absolutely. And Peter, when we think of ourselves as energetic, moving in this pond of energy, how we move in the pond, how we engage with the pond and other inhabitants, absolutely changes that energetic flow, which changes what returns to us.
Exactly.
And what form it takes. And actually, the detachment is the interesting thing, because if you're detached about the returning energy, you place no value on it. When you place no value on it, when you're detached from it, you don't recreate it. You don't resend it.
Yeah, so, you know, I think that we do have to keep in mind that, as you earlier said, John, that, you know, there's good and bad karma. They're half and half in actual fact. You know, it's sort of the majority of our lives based on good karma. It's obviously, you know, we if we got take a foot wrong, obviously we're going to suffer consequences.
Mm.
I mean, that happens in the law. That happens in every situation, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know, it's not just God's will, but we've got laws and whatnot. If you go speeding down the road, you'd probably get caught.
Mm-hmm.
And suffer the consequences. And so, you know, it's a very easy thing to say, well, it was bad karma. But in actual fact, if you were speeding, it was stupidity.
Yeah. Yeah, so actually it's in our hands, isn't it, Peter?
Of course it is.
And that, Nigel, brings us back to where we started. It's in our hands.
It's in our hands, and I'd like to ask you both to answer this question. To help us avoid making bad karma, often service.
Oh, yes.
Why is service so important in our relationship to karma, John?
Because service deconstructs the ego, takes our attention away from self.
If it's altruistic.
Yes, and places it on others. And that starts the honesty, sincerity, detachment process, which leads to harmlessness.
What's your take on service, Peter, in regard to karma?
Yeah, well, it is actually a soul impulse, you know, to serve. It's what we have come as souls to serve, and we've taken on a physical body to do that. And, you know, what great service is that? And providing we sort of end up ruling that, like running the show rather than the body running the show, as it were. I mean, that really is the contradistinction, isn't it? I mean, eventually all of us will control our vehicles, our body, our mind, our thoughts, everything, and we'll be not creating any bad karma. We will be harmless.
That's right, and that's another law. The law of service burns up karma, burning up existing karmic patterns, and releasing ourselves from the burden of past actions. Right relationship, where possible, appropriate, exercise goodwill and kindness.
All this information can be found on the Share International website, www.share-international.org. And also don't forget the podcasts, which are available on the Plains FM website.
We welcome your comments, questions and feedback. Please contact us at emergencenews@gmail.com.